indicated also by Megillah, Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, Kamita Shel Torah. That's the Shita of Tosfos. And the alternative Shita that we saw, the alternative Shitot that we saw, were those of Rashi and of the Rambam. Rashi Shita was that Sirtut is a din in Sefer, and therefore applies to anything that we would define as a Sefer. Of course, Sefer Torah, Hu Adin Megillah. This is Divrei Shalom Ve'emes. It has, we have over here a comparison to the Torah, Ksiva Ksiva. And Hu Adin would apply to Megillas Sota, which is a Sefer and not an Igeris. Hu Adin would apply to a Get, Sefer Krisus. And of course, to Mezuzah, where we have Halacha Moshe Misinai, that across the board, wherever we have a concept of Sefer, there we have a din of Sirtut, and one din of Sirtut, called Shura Veshura, Lachora. We don't know anything about a mini Sirtut. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that, no, the din of Sefer, of Ksiva, Ksiva, is a din in terms of the material. Klaf, Dio, those are dinim of Sefer. There we have a comparison between Megillah and Sefer Torah. However, within the world of Sirtut, we're not dealing with Sefer as much as Torah. Kamita shel Torah. The content, not the form, the content of Torah is that which is Mechayev Sirtut, and then we would have Sirtut, according to the Rambam, in Sefer Torah, in Mezuzah, in Kisvei HaKodesh, in general, right, by Get Yevimin, anytime a Pasuk is quoted, we're going to have, because we have over here a din of Torah. The question is, according to the Rambam, why is Tefillin different? Why is Tefillin different? Why is it a Yotze Dofen? Here the Rambam basically says, black on white, why Tefillin is different. What reason does he give? Mipnei Shehein Mechupin. The question is, what is the Rambam saying over here with these three words, Mipnei Shehein Mechupin? So what if tefillin are found in the batim? What does that have to do with the fact of it being Torah? We have over here a din that Torah requires sirtut. Why should mechupin impact on the din of Torah? No. What directions do you have to go? Since we saw in the Ramban that the purpose of sirtut is for kriya, to make the kriya Kala, so maybe you need something which lends itself to Kriya. The moment that by Tefillin we have a din that it's Mechupin, that it was meant to be Gonus, it was meant to be Sosur Min Ha'ayin, so therefore there's no concept over here of readability. And then the only issue that we have is distinguishing between Tefillin and Mezuzah, where Mezuzah certainly does require Sirtut even though it's rolled up, and we have to ask ourselves, is this concept we roll up a Mezuzah, where does it come from? Are we dealing with the Doraisa? Are we dealing with the Drabanan? Are we dealing with the Minhag? And could a mezuzah be open? Basically what we find if we look is that we have over here a Minhag which is very, very, very Atik Yomin. And there are those that say that going against the Minhag would passel the mezuzah. But Me'ikar Adin, we're dealing with a Minhag. In other words, it's not something which is built into the Halacha Moshe Misinai, that a mezuzah has to be rolled up, and therefore the mezuzah can be called nitan l'kriya, even though it's rolled up. Mashiach came to tefillin, there we have halacha Moshe Misinai, has to be in the bayis, bedafka, it shouldn't be seen. Within the tefillin, there are also halachas that it should be tied, and around the parasha which is tied, there should be another piece of klaf or a piece of bad, etc., that it should be sasim betoch sasim. Okay, that's one possibility. What other hesber did we have for sirtut that would also explain why tefillin would be different than everything else because it's in the bayit, not only because of readability but also we saw by Heker we saw a day of the Meiri rejected but the Hagos Yavitz accepted that the purpose of sirtut is Heker, that if one were to see a wedding invitation, so the sirtut would remind you to treat it with kedusha. And so, of course, if this is going to be ne'ela min ha'ayin, there's no purpose of heker. Heker is something that can be seen and could be dealt with bezilzul. Over here, if one can't see it, how can one deal with the bezilzul? So these two reasons, be it the reason of heker or be it the reason of kriya, certainly would explain why tefillin would be a yotzei dofen. As an aside, there is a sefer put out of the Torah of Rav Soloveitchik on there's a set of sfarim on different topics. One of the sfarim, I think it was put out by Rav Koningsberg, if not mistaken. One of the sfarim is on Stam, on Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzah. There is a chapter there on Sirtut. And over there, the Rav wanted to take these two hesberim and say that this is the difference between, within Tosas, within Rabbeinu Tam, between the Sirtut of Mezuzah and the Sirtut of Kol HaTorah Kula. The Sirtut of Mezuzah, we say, is called Shura V'Shura. The Sirtut of Kol HaTorah Kula is the top line. Which of these would link in with Heker and which would link in with Kriya? The top line is Heker, Kol Shura V'Shura makes it easier to read. They want to say that these, it's not a question either or, but according to us, it's either these are the two dinim. The two dinim of Sirtut is we have a din b'Kol HaTorah Kula of Heker, either via the top line or the frame, and then we have a din in Mezuzah of readability. And he said in the name of his father, in the name of Moshe Soloveitchik, the nafkamina would be, does the Sirtut have to be straight? Does the Sirtut have to be straight? What if one makes a curved line for the Sirtut? If it's a din of Heker, my nafkamina. If it's a din of readability, so the whole purpose of readability is making it straight. In other words, that would be a nafkamina. Okay, so these would be two ways. If we want to link the Rambam in with readability, it would explain why Tefillin is different. If we want to link the Rambam in with Heker, it would explain why Tefillin is different. But we pointed out that Yitzchein, that there is another Hezber for the world of Sirtut, neither readability nor Heker, but simply the phrase which is generally used in the Brisker world is Tzura. This is the Tzura of Kisvei HaKodesh. The Tzura of Kisvei HaKodesh, just like it's written on Klaf, and just like it's written Bidyo, the Tzura of Kisvei HaKodesh is that you have Sirtut. That's simply built in. The same way we have a din of Ksav Ashuris, that's the Tzura of Kisvei HaKodesh, so you also have a din of Sirtut. You have Ksav Ashuris, which is Mesurtut, Bidyo, on Klaf, that's the Tzura of Kisvei HaKodesh. The background, or a makor for such an opinion, Rav Bednarsh mentioned in his Chabura, is a machlokes achronim that we find raised. In achronim, usually we don't look at. There's a Shev Shuvas Shev Yaakov. I don't know who wrote it, but he quotes a machlokes achronim. But Rav Bednarsh found it in the Shuvas of Rabbi Kiva Eger, in the volume of Shelos Shuvas Rabbi Kiva Eger Tinyana, Simon Hey, in the middle there. He talks about different aspects of Kisvei HaKodesh, and he raises the issue, does the part of the Sefer Torah, which is chalak, in which there are no letters, the breaks between the paragraphs, between the parashios, does that also require sirtut? If it's a din of readability, if it's a din of heker, but if it's a din of tzura, that's the tzura. The tzura is that we have a blank space which is set off by sirtut. And if you're dealing with the concept of tzura, it's irrelevant if we have letters there that you want to read or don't want to read. But if we take that approach of tzura, which is certainly a valid approach, it's what we call, I guess, a halacha l'moshe misinai of sirtut, an arbitrary din of sirtut as opposed to a practical din of sirtut in terms of readability or in terms of heker, if we take that halacha of sirtut, we have that halacha of sirtut, so why in the world then should tefillin be different? Tefillin certainly has a status of kisvei HaKodesh, so why, my nafkamina that it's betoch habayit? Could you explain tefillin even according to this way of learning? Now, so far what we did was we explained tefillin according to the Ramban. We explained tefillin according to the Yavetz. We explained tefillin according to the Rav, the two deos of the Tosos. But can we explain tefillin even if we're going to say that sirtut is a halacha, it's a din in surah, it's like ksav ashuris, why then should tefillin be different? So I'm not mistaken, I think over there also in the article that summarizes the Rav's Torah on sirtut, he wanted to offer the following hypothesis. Maybe the din of sirtut, which we pointed out, is a din of Torah. Right? We're dealing within the Rambam. It's a din not of Sefer, but of Torah. It's a din of Torah, the content of Torah. Maybe that's only Kisvei HaKodesh that have an innate Kedusha. Namely, their Kedusha stems from their being written, period. That's what gives them the Kedusha. Just the fact that we have a parsha that's written with the psukim, that gives the Kedusha. However, in terms of tefillin, that's the situation of Sefer Torah, situation of mezuzah, situation of Megillah, according to the Hekesh to Torah, that the writing of it gives it its Kedusha and therefore requires Sirtut. However, within the world of tefillin, we have a package deal. We have the parshios, we have the batim, we have the ritzuos. The Kedusha is given to the package deal. Yitzachin, that's what it means, v'nei shehein mechupin, that their Kedusha isn't an independent Kedusha of writing, it's a part of a package deal of mechupin, of being inside of batim, and these batim are kosher with ritzuos, v'chulei, then there's no din of sirtut. The halacha of sirtut is when you want to give psukim, the Kedushas Kisvei HaKodesh, per se. Then the sirtut is part and parcel of that Kedusha. But if the Kedusha comes from a broader perspective, if it comes from a taking into account other factors as well, then maybe there's no din of sirtut. Perhaps.
The
cloth
itself still has
sirtut. I agree. I'm just you know, saying that if you want to take the approach of Tzura, and behold that you want to understand the Rambam, this is an approach. Okay, take it or leave it. Okay, anything else that we have in terms of sirtut that we didn't mention that anyone wants to bring up? Okay. Lamaisa, we don't do sirtut on tefillin. Correct. As halacha Moshe Yisinai, right. And in other words, even according to Rabbeinu Tam, that tefillin lends itself to the din of kol haTorah kula, the minhag was not to do sirtut, and he brings it right from the Gemara, that's why you have a problem of turning tefillin into mezuzah, because we're lacking, even though it could have been done, it's the bottom line is it's not done.
Does it have to require scrap etching, or is it going to be like written?
That's a chakira in the achronim, not in the rishonim. Does sirtut have to be etched, or can sirtut also be written, let's say, with pencil? Would that also be sirtut, or somehow with ink? It's taking a photo offsetting a sirtut onto a page. L'chora, these would be totally in the various chakiros as to what exactly is the din of a sirtut. Hu adin, does sirtut have to remain, or can it be even temporary? And hu adin, what other chakira? Could sirtut be put in after the letters are written? And let's say you forgot to do sirtut, could after you write it, if you have a good handwriting and it's straight anyway, can afterwards you put in the sirtut? So again, all of these would be totally, is this a din in surah? Is it a din in heker? Is it a din in Nitan Likros? These would all be nafgaminas, and we find this dealt with in the Achronim. Yes? If one were to be writing it as a pasuk, it's not a hiddur, it's a halacha. In other words, therefore, it would be better to not, what we do normally is we don't write an entire pasuk, to change the order of the words in the pasuk. That's like in the Yerushalmi. And it's not to, again, if you're not going to do that, then you're samach on the fact that you're not writing Ksav Ashuris. And as we pointed out, that we have the heter of the Ramban. If it's not Ksav Ashuris, but then again, we have the question of what exactly is Ksav Ashuris. So, one should try and play around, but clearly to write an entire pasuk in black print on an invitation as a koteret is not that much advised, not only in terms of the question of Geniza, but also in terms of the issue of sirtut. But then again, the question is, does sirtut apply also when you're printing as opposed to when you're writing? All of these are open issues. Rav Moshe wants to say that sirtut doesn't apply to the world of printing, only to the world of handwriting. Okay.
Yeah,
that's Alocha Moshe Mishinah. The same. Okay, let's move over to our proof that Rav Yosser was a Gavra Rabba. V'od ha-Rav Yosser, the second wide line, Hu da'askim mare al yode, d'chsi v'atiz na'lav pilaksho, Rav Yosser mezvuv matzah b'la, Rav Yonathan Omer, Nima Matzala, neither understood Vatizne as Mamash Znut. For what reason? The Pashtus Parsha in Shoftim. He tried to get her back, right. In other words, as Pashtus, it was a Hakpada, but Vatizne would be a Hakpada relating to Mazon, from Lashon Znut, in Lashon of Znut, or Nima Matzaba from Osamakam. Ashkhay Rav Yosef Yehu Amali b'mai Oved HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asik v'dilesh b'givu. Umayko Omer, Amali Rav Yosef b'ni Kachu Omer, Yonasan b'ni Kachu Omer. What in the world is going on over here? So, I sent you for one direction to the Maharami Prague. I think I can understand Maharami Prague maybe a little better than you, simply because of I'm a little older, and as such, I don't know how many of you were alive when there was a Cuban missile crisis or a Russian missile crisis. That at one time, when Kennedy was president in the beginning of his candidacy, before the Bay of Pigs, the Russians decided to send missiles and put them in Cuba to, you know, that should be their advanced base. Like the United States had nuclear missiles on the border in Germany, so they would put missiles in Cuba, tit for tat. And there was a period of tremendous brinksmanship, where each side threatened to shoot the other one, to basically shoot off their missiles, and there were enough nuclear warheads to destroy the world over and over enough times until someone blinked, and in the end it was Khrushchev who blinked, and this was written up in Profiles of Courage, Vahule, how Kennedy managed to stare down Khrushchev. But if you're writing history, you want to know, how did this come about? Namely, you want to know the tahaliyah. How did you reach a point where the world was almost destroyed? The world was almost destroyed. Had either of them not blinked, the world would have been destroyed. How do you reach a point where the world is almost destroyed in order to learn from it, to try and stop it before it gets to that nekuda? That's what Kiviyachal HaKadosh Baruch Hu was dealing with over here. Pidegish Begiva created a situation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost was forced to return the world to Tohu Vavohu. Why? Because we know that without Yisrael, there is no world. B'reshit b'shvil Yisrael, b'shvil reshit. Without Klal Yisrael being in the world, were there to be no Jew in the world, there would be no world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes everything to tohu vavohu. If one of the shvatim would be totally obliterated, that's the equivalent of there not being Yisrael in the world. There is not the shlemus of Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would destroy the world. Pegegesh Begiva got to a point where the world was almost destroyed. In other words, where Shevet Binyamin was almost totally, totally obliterated. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting trying to figure out, what can I do to, how can I teach the world what exactly is going on over here? How did they almost reach the point of no return? And the starting off point of the Maharal, and this is classic Maharal, is that the world... Istakel ba'oraisu bara alma, the world was created with a sense of order, with a sense of balance. The Torah is that order. The Torah is that balance. If the world goes too far to direction X or direction Y, if it goes out of the Seder, then it's going to be destroyed. A Shevet being obliterated is going so far out of the Seder that the world would be destroyed. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that his antidote to this was Sefer Shmuel, namely after Sefer Shoftim, Sefer Shmuel. Pilesh Begiva came about, Ki b'yamim ahem einelch b'Yisrael, ish kol ha-yashar ben av yaseh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to bring at this point Malchus into Yisrael. The Melech, his tafkid is to create a just society, to see that we'll never get to that point of Is Seder. The Melech brings about Seder. The Melech, that's his tafkid, that's what the Rambam defines the purpose of the Melech in Hilchos Melachim, a number of places, but one of the classic ones is at the end of Perek Dalet. The Ubakol, in all of the Mishpatei HaMelech, Yiyu Ma'asav L'Shem Shemayim, at the end of Perek Dalet, Hilchos Melachim, V'tiyeh Megamaso Machshavto Gohorim Data Emet, L'malot Ha'olam Tzedek, L'shbor Zroa HaRishayim, L'hilachim Milchamot Hashem, She'ein Mamlichim Melech Tzila Elo L'asot Mishpat U'Milchamot, She'nemar U'Shefatnu Malkeinu, V'yatzal Ofeninu V'Nilchamet Milchamotenu. In other words, that the Melech is L'ashiva Shoftenu K'varishona. That's the concept of Malchus. So the Melech would have prevented this Pilegish Begiva from snowballing. But what happened? What was the process? How did the E-Seder begin? So over here, the question is, did the e-seder begin with a zvuv, or did an e-seder begin with a nima? And then this e-seder snowballed, mushroomed into the fact that an entire shevet was always destroyed. So what the Maharal points out is that the concept of znut is basically that the classic e-seder, namely a lack of loyalty, a begida, a stabbing in the back, that's the concept of znut. And znut we find in two areas. We find znut in the area of the guf, by the isha zona, and we find znut in the area of the nefesh. You know, it's called oved avodah zarah. That's the concept of znut halev. You have znut haguf, and you have znut ha-nefesh. Sefer Mishlei is the classic example. In other words, the Isha Zona in Sefer Mishlei, we have the Mashal and the Nimshal, relates to Znut Pshuto Kamashma'o in Znut Aguf and Znut of Avodah Zarah. That's, you know, it's throughout Sefer Mishlei, that's the main thing. These are the two areas of Znut. And one of these two areas of Znut, either the Znut of the Nefesh or the Znut of the Guf, brought about the snowballing, that it began with something relatively small. The znut haguf would be the zvuv, the mius. The znut ha-nefesh would be the nima, the sakana. This brought about, the next stage was the hakpada. The hakpada, in other words, to throw someone out of one's house, that's taking the e-seder one step further, takes it from a mius or from a sakana to a higher level. That brings about znut on both levels, namely that the Pilegesh was ne'eneset, that she was raped, and then she was killed. So we have this znut haguf and this znut ha-nefesh being brought, and then all of that brings about the destruction, kemat destruction, of an entire shevet. So the machlokes over here between Rav Yosser and Rav Yonasan was which started it off, which started the ball rolling, which is more problematic. And when Eliyahu was asked by Rebbe Yosser, Miika Sveika Karpishmaya, Amar Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elohim Chayim, Zvuv Matzah Velohikpid, Nima Matzah Vehikpid, namely it was a combination. It was a combination, one built upon the other. The Ika Da Amrei, the combination was one that was Unsa, and the other that was Pshia. In the world of Guf, one could speak about Ones. In the world of Nefesh, one speaks about Pshia, v'chulei. And that's the background over here of Pilegesh Begifim. But what's important for us, I mean, I think it's important to know that, you know, it's in from a Kodesh Baruch Hu's perspective, he sees the cause and effect that when one wants to understand Mahalachim in the world, realize that it all starts with something small, but by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that e-seder simply multiplies itself and multiplies itself and multiplies itself to bring about an e-seder which can destroy a world. Over here, the concept of Divrei Elohim Chayim is that both. In other words, the question was, Miika Sveika, is it a question of this way or that way? No, it's both. But that can't always fit in. A Machlokes Beshamayim and Beshilil, you can't say that both are equally correct. Nor in the Gemara that I sent you in Chagiga, Elu Metaharim Ve'elu Metamim, Elu Osrim Ve'elu Matirim, that doesn't fit in to the Elu Ve'elu that we have in our Gemara. So how does one understand that concept of Elu Ve'elu? So for this I sent you to a whole group of Maharim HaKamos. So I guess that we should have them in front of us. I printed them up again, so if you can, Yitzhak, if you can pass these around. How can I say Daniel to pass these around? As they're being passed around, how many shitot did you find in Elu Ve'elu? No, not a lot. Have to break it down. Two or three. Okay, let's start off. Three is always a nice number. The Rugged Trevor like three. What would you say are the three Pinchas? In big, I mean, in the big picture, and then we'll break them down.
That there is,
No, no, either there is an MS, that's one, or, and then we'll have to understand the other sheet, right? But, or,
or that whatever we decide is the MS?
That's two. You said there are three.
No.
Binyamin?
Well, it seems in my realm written that there are multiple MS even by the Ishmael, meaning even in the upper realms coming down, there are multiple truths that we can tap into.
That's one.
And then,
I don't agree with your with where you put them, but that's one opinion, yeah.
And then one MS in Shamayim, and then multiplicity down here.
Or
one MS down here, and then everyone else is Sheker.
I hear what you're saying. I would define it, I think, a little differently. Either there's one MS, or there is more than one MS, or there is no MS. I would divide it into those three. I think that way we'd be able to put things into, you know, to fit the various shitos into those three categories. There is one truth, one absolute truth. There are what you call multiple truths, could be two, could be three, etc. Or there is really no such thing as truth, which is very frightening. But I think that we do find such a shita in the. In the Rishonim. Again, it's a question of how to read things. Let's take the shita that there is really only one truth. That I think would make most people very, very happy to believe that really there is one truth. There's no more than one truth. But fascinatingly, we don't find that shita at all in the Rishonim. That we do find it quite strongly over here in the Achronim. Which Achronim are in favor of the shita of there being one truth? What? No. What? I mean, I shouldn't say no. I'm sorry. Rav Moshe Feinstein, yes. The Chida, yes. I'm sorry. The Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Chida. Who else would be in that there is only one truth? Tos, Rashi. What? Rashi, no. Torah Tmima. Okay. Let's assume that we're going to have one truth. Let's assume we're going to start off with that there's really only one truth. But we have another opinion, and we have Chazal telling us, Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. If there's only one truth, what is the easiest way of learning the concept of Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim? If there's really, really only one truth.
Is that there might only be one truth, but you need all sides to lead to that truth, and they serve a purpose, though. And Divrei Elohim doesn't necessarily mean that that's the correct halacha, but it does allow us to get to Divrei Elohim.
That the, in other words, that there's only one truth, but the other opinion is considered to be Torah, because it helps lead us to that truth. Let me say, correct?
Yeah.
Who is that opinion? Where do we find that opinion? That's the Torah Tmima, and that is also the first opinion in the Chida. Let's read first the Chida. His language is, Be'emet, you know, very, very, very clear. I'm going to over here on the bottom. She'ein perusha d'shneihem emes. Ela lehiyos she'ein ha'or nikor ela mitoch ha'choshech. Nimtza d'svara ha'menagedet to'il lehavin et heitev ha'svara ha'amitit be'etzem. That we have over here a contrast. That something becomes clearer when you have a contrast, when you have a foil. If I raise to you two options, then it's easier for you to understand the real option. In other words, the other option is just raised in order to serve as a contrast of the real option. Light shines stronger in a dark background. So we bring in a dark background in order that we see the light of the truth. And this is the Torah Tmima that rejects, in other words, had Rashi not said what he said, what he would have claimed is that al pi deot shonot mitchadshot svarot shonot umitoch kach mitba'er amitat hadin lugei kein hayukovim halacha al pi amuskal harishon. Had we not had the ability of having other opinions, we would have made mistakes because we would have seen things at first sight. Ubof and zeh, in other words, namely taking things at first sight, efshar lishgot v'litot, and therefore we have other opinions in order to serve as a give and a take. That's why learning b'chavrusa, even though only one of the chavrusa is going to be correct in his opinion, however, it's important for him to have a chavrusa, because otherwise he may not have ever gotten to the fine-tune the truth. Okay, this is, again, the Chida and the Torah Tmima, that we have right and we have wrong, but the wrong is important because it helps give us a background for the right. Yes?
I just have a problem with that because just the words, Elu Be'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, it just seems that it's equating them to. They're not, and to say that that which is falsehood serves the same purpose as that which is truth is a lot more bothersome to me than saying that there are two truths.
Okay, so you don't like it. I accept the fact you don't like it. I'm not taking a vote over here who likes it, who doesn't like it. We're just dealing with trying to define opinions. The probably the closest to this that we find in the other shitos would be that which we find in the Nesivos on the top. That the Nesivos begins his Hakdama by excusing himself if there are mistakes, and he says that if you find a mistake, you shouldn't reject the entire Sefer, that there are things here probably that are true as well, and in general, we shouldn't simply judge people by one mistake, that we should view everything they say. And then he points out, but even the mistakes serve a purpose. Even the mistakes serve a purpose. V'gam zot im hashkiya v'ha'ta'ut sheker hu ba'atzmuso to'elet yesh bo l'chachamim. Because by making mistakes, that's how you come to the truth. And he gives the mashal of the person who is diving for pearls, and he comes up with pieces of pottery. But by coming up with pieces of pottery, he's able to hone in what does a pearl really feel like. I mean, by knowing what's wrong, he's going to come to the truth of what is right. That pretty much is, you know, is in a more figurative manner, is what the Torah Tmima and what the Chidah are aiming at. There is a pearl and there is pottery, but only by picking up the pottery are you going to appreciate and are you going to become more expertise at finding the pearls. Yeah?
Do we know that he's talking with him?
No. But we know that he's dealing with the importance of shkia and toes, which is basically what's behind the elu ve'elu of this approach. What bothers Binyamin is what the Nesivos is trying to explain, that the shkia and the toes are not just a side effect, they are the process. The process of going to the truth is by tripping. You know, it's what is it? There's a pasuk in Mishlei that you know, it's that the tzaddik is nofel shiva v'kam. It's not in spite of the fact that he's nofel shiva that he's come, but because he was nofel shiva that he's come. That creates the tzaddik. So over here, that's in the world of Musar and Hashkafa. In the world of Torah, that which creates the emes is the shkia.
I agree with that concept.
Yeah?
I just don't think that has anything to do
with elu ve'elu. Correct. Okay. But the Nesivos would be giving the rationale for the elu ve'elu that we find in the Torah Tmima and in the Chida. That's one approach. Yes?
According to the Nesivos, in order to arrive at the truth, you have to recognize the falsehood as falsehood. Just having two opinions doesn't help you unless you recognize that one is pottery and the other is actually.
Right. But you're only going to recognize that by making the mistake of bringing up the pottery and saying, look what I found, and, oh, just a minute. In other words, sorry, back, go back down again. In other words, that only by the trial and error are you going to come to, and without a second opinion, there's no trial and error, so that second opinion is given a place. It's given, in other words, it's a chashid, you shouldn't throw away a sefer that has toyot in it, because that's divrei Elohim chayim. In other words, I'm taking it one step beyond the sivus, but that's where he's going. Whether we'd apply it to the phrase or not, I can't promise you. This is one permutation of having one truth. There is a second permutation of having one truth, which is found in the Ktzos and in Rav Moshe, and they base themselves on Aran that I didn't print out for you, simply because I wanted to give you one page and that's too long. But also, it's quoted over here in the Ktzos, and also Rav Chisim is learning the Drashas Aran, so I'll let him deal with it in a much more a better manner than I'm ever going to deal with it. What is that approach? What is the approach over here of Rav Moshe and the Ktzos and the Ran? Again, starting off, there's only one truth, but what is that second opinion?
The difference between Shemayim and Aretz. We don't know the truth in Aretz, and therefore, you know, by using Torah and coming up with an approach, whether it's technically true or not, is not necessarily relevant.
Okay, taking it one... In other words, using their lashon, you're correct in what you're saying, and you know it's yes.
There's one truth that varies based on.
No, there's one truth. The truth never varies. There's one truth, but when we say Elu ve'elu divrei chayim, that truth is irrelevant to us in terms of Pesach Halacha. And therefore, the two deos that we have, one of them could be true and one of them could be false. Well, Paskin like the false one because according to our rules, according to the rules of the game, truth is not the criteria by which we decide halacha. And therefore, you can sometimes have one being true and one being false, or even both of them being false, but they're still divrei Elohim chayim because those are the rules of the game. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to paskin. And this is what gave Rav Moshe the courage to write his tshuvos, even though clearly, in his opinion, he's not on the level of Rabbi Kiva Eger, who can be, hopefully, aim for the truth, or of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, who clearly had an insight into truth. He says he doesn't have that insight into truth. However, that is not the criteria, is it objectively true or not? The MS is only one MS. One tries to reach that MS, but even if one doesn't, that's still considered to be halacha, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave everything over to Seichel HaEnoshi. Yes?
That only works for Pesach, not for, Drush.
The Ktsos deals with it, and you're correct, they're both dealing with it within the level of Pesach. To say that it only works for Pesach, I don't know. In other words, they're not talking, they're asking in terms of the context in which they're writing. But the Ktsos, the Ran, when he is speaking, I don't recall that he's speaking only in terms of Pesach. Just to see the Ktsos inside, now, it's after distinguishing between the concept of emes, which is something which is divine, Avol Kadosh Baruch Hu, the third line, Bachar Banu, V'nosan Lanu Es HaTorah, Kefi Hachra'at Seichel HaEnoshi, Af Alpi She'eno Emes. That's the most important line over here in the Ktzos. V'yimken HaMachad Shehu Chidush Gomor, Rak She'yeh Emes B'Hachra'as HaSeichel HaEnoshi. And therefore, you have many opinions. Hera Lemoshe, Masha Tamed Vasek, Osik Lachadesh, because all of that, since it lends itself to Sechel HaEnoshi, that's considered to be part of Torah. And the Malachim were not happy at all with this approach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I want Emes Mi Eretz Titzmach. And that's the language of the Bracha, Asher Bachar Banu. Asher nosan lanu toras emes, shieha emet itanu, it's our emes which is creating Torah, v'chayei olam nota b'sochenu. And here he brings in the Ran, in which the Ran gives the example that if you have doctors who claim that we have an emes within the world of medicine, that certain medications can heal and certain medications can destroy, then no matter... In other words, even if the doctors were to make a mistake and give a person the wrong medicine, it would kill him. But within the world of Torah, that's the power that was given to the Chachamim. They can turn poison into medicine. That they have over here at the school, that's the Chayi Olam, Nota Besochenu. That in terms of eternal life, that was given to us in terms of using Seichel HaEnoshi. V'zen Shonavark Nasan Torah Semesh, Yeh Emet Itanu. The Shemet Omar, if it's not MS, maybe we're being mazik. Chayi olam nata besochenu. These are the rules of the game. And Rav Moshe says it as well. And his language, I think, is very, very, very clear. And gives the example of the city in Eretz Yisrael, where it's where we see that life is determined by a search for MS, but not necessarily reaching the real MS. And therefore, shneihem divrehim chayim, af shehemet amiti gal yoklap ishmaya, duhurak ke'echad mehem, or even of neither of them. Okay? So again, all of these are approaches to the opinion that we have one MS, but the other, in other words, how to deal with the second opinion, either say that that is simply a foil, a contrast, it's a mistake, but it helps us to the goal, or... the other opinion may be MS, but that's not what is involved in the process of Pesach Halacha. The process of Pesach Halacha is simply voting according to Seichel HaEnoshi. Lo b'shamayim hei. However, as I pointed out, the Rishon, who is the source of all this, is the Ran. Okay, we do have a Ran. We do have a Rishon. The Ran is the source of this. However, Rashi has a different approach, and everyone recognizes that Rashi has a different approach. And Rashi's approach is, which approach is that of Rashi? Multiple truths. There's not one MS. There are many things that are MS. And how can they both be right? So Rashi says it depends upon what? Everything has its time, place, circumstances. That we have a multiple truth. We can have something, we can say that this sheretz is tohar and it's tameh. It's tameh if we have a safek birishus hayachid. It's tohar when we have a safek birishus harabim. Namely, the emes is that this sheretz sometimes is tameh and sometimes is tohar. It depends on the circumstance. And hu adin, every machlokis that we have, there is room for the other opinion under different circumstances. That's what he ends off with. Ikla meimar elu ve'elu diroim chayim heim, zimnin deshayach haitaima, zimnin deshayach haitaima, hata mishapech lufi shinui hadvarim b'shinui mu'at. And that's what the Chida brings in his second opinion. V'yeshekosu de me'asfara ha'menageret v'mitama nikach ha'askil v'nosein ta'am l'din acher. In other words, even though in this circumstance, under these circumstances, it won't help us, but under other circumstances, it'll help us. Nimsa de elu ve'elu divrim chayim ke yisodat v'tame shnei hasfaros emet, rak b'chiguf hanosim yishtane hadid. So we have one opinion where that we have one truth, we have a second opinion, we have multiple truths, and then we have a third opinion, that is the Ritva and the Maharal, and that is... What? That there are no truths. Or if you want to call it infinite truths, but that there are no limits in terms of defining truth. It's not as though we have one truth, it's not as though we have two truths, but rather, Shaul Rabbeinu Tzarfas, Hech Efshar Shiyesh Neim Divrei Emes, Zeh Chai Mechaye Bezeh, Zeh Osev Ezeh Matir, V'tirtzu Kisha'ala Moshe Lamarim L'kaibel HaTorah Herulo HaKol Dover V'Dover Mem Tet Panim L'Isur U'Mem Tet Panim L'Heter, that we have an infinite possibilities. Shal kochibrichal ze amar shiyeze masur lechachmi Yisrael b'chol dor v'dor v'yehach ra'a kamosam, but not that we have over here an MS at all. You know, if there's no MS, there's simply a tsurat hitnahagut. If we behave in a certain manner because really there are multiple options when I say truth. There's no one truth. There are multiple options, and the Chachamim have the right of choosing between the multiple options. This we find, I think, in the Be'er HaGola, in the Maharal, where he asked the same question. In other words, Shema Tomar Hecha Nilo Me Torah. In other words, he quotes the Gemara in Chagiga, and he wants to explain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world of compounds. As opposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is one unity, the world that he created is a world of compounds. Everything is made up of factors. Everything is made up of elements. In other words, the elements are put together, perhaps differently, but there's nothing which is a whole. Everything has different parts to it, different elements, what he calls bechinot. And just as we find that in the physical world, everything has bechinot, hu hadin, in the spiritual world, in the world of Torah, everything has bichinot. And sometimes it's obvious to us what is the ikar and what is the tafel. And then we say that we're going to define the object as the ikar. Sometimes the elements are equal in terms of their input. And then we have the choice of choosing how we're going to view it. And neither of them are, it's a question of a perspective. You can view it from this perspective, you can view it from that perspective. It's not that we have over here one MS, or two emet, or multiple MS. There's no MS, it's all a question of his taklut, how this can be viewed. That's where he ends off. L'famim ha-bechinot shavim l'gamri mitzad atzmo, v'az shneihem min Hashem yitbarach b'shaveh, v'ein machriya. V'zeh machloke tilo v'shamay, v'yatsu basko amro elu ve'elu, Shnehem shavim bebechinot. He's very careful not to use the word emes. Shnehem shavim bebechinot. Ze kaze. Vekevan sheha bechinot shaveh. Shnehem divrei Elohim chayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us, al pidin, to look at things from this perspective and from this perspective. Sometimes the bechina is tahor, and then it should be tahor. Sometimes it's tamei, and then it's tamei. And sometimes it's shave. And then, elu ve'elu, divrei Elohim chayim. That one has the right to view it from this perspective and not from another perspective. Namely, not everything lends itself to machlokes. There's no machlokes if whether chametz on Pesach is mutar or aser. The Torah tells us chametz on Pesach is aser, no matter what our seichel enoshi may tell us. That is a given. However, there are areas of machloket. Sometimes the machloket is a machloket where there are no two sides. One side is obviously correct, but we have machlokes where habachinot shavim, and those are the machlokes Hillel and Shammai, habachinot shavim, and both perspectives are considered to be divrei Elohim chayim.
So in the case of Rav Yossar, had they not both been right, that could not have been because this is a historical fact.
Nachon. So here the Gemara had to come on to the fact of the different Elu Ve'elu. I said in our Gemara, the Elu Ve'elu is of a very limited nature. When one moves over to the Elu Ve'elu of Chagiga, the Elu Ve'elu of Eruvin, then one has to come on either to the approach of one MS in the two permutations, the permutation of the Torah Tmima and the Chido on one side, or the permutation, and the Nesivos, I'm sorry, on one side, or permutation of the Ktzos and Rav Moshe and the Ran on the other side, or come on to Rashi's approach, or come on to the third approach of the Ritva and the Ber HaGola. Yeah?
I didn't quite understand. Did the Ramona say that Chametz Pesach doesn't have Bechinot, or does it?
There's no Bechinot.
But there are times and time and mixtures and all kinds of things.
Then it's not Chametz. If it's Chametz, it's Aser on Pesach. If it's not Pesach, it's Mutter. If it's not chametz, it's not royal achila, so then it's not chametz. If it's batel, it's not chametz. In other words, if it's chametz, and if we have Pesach, then it's aser. That's what he says over here. Hashem yitbaruch natan haTorah. V'tziva kol lefi habachina. Im habachina letahara, tziva alav tahor. And there's no machlokes. V'hefach gamkin. Im habachina letuma, tziva alav tamei. That's not a machlokes. That's a given. The Torah is a given. However, then we move over into situations that are unclear. So some of those situations that are unclear, everyone agrees. In other words, there's no machlokas. Everyone agrees that in this situation, we're going to go in a certain manner. That's the Iker and the Tafel. And then we have those cases that can be viewed from two perspectives. You're correct that the Maharal is less radical than the Ritva. The Ritva, you know, who will say, Herelo kol davar v'davar, mem tet panim le'iser, mem tet panim le'heter, and kol davar v'davar, you're correct. That goes far beyond the Maharal. The Maharal said, there are those things that there's only one bechina, there are those where there's an ikur and a tafel, and then there are those where you have a shivyon. You're right, right. Yes, Svi.
How does it affect the word Moshe, I think, mentions specifically that according to a certain rabbi, if he holds a certain way, it's all Tamidim follow him. And for them, that's right. And for other people, they do that. And for them, it's right. So according to the way that, you know, either there's no MS or the idea that's defined by Sechel and Mashi, so I understand. According to the way of the first way that only one's right, and another way is trying to help us understand how the other one's right. So how do we understand? And also, I guess it's a side connected point. I mean, how far did that extend, the idea of Tamidim on a certain opinion to be able to continue to hold that way, and what happened then?
You're asking, the questions are very, very proper. I'll just try and give you a framework of an answer. In terms of, according to the approach of the Torah Tmima, the Chida, and the Nesivos, so the people who are following the wrong opinion, so onus rachmana patrit. In other words, that inachinami, it's not emes. Inachinami, they're making a mistake. But since they're, you know, words, this is as far as their seichel enoshi brings them, or, you know, al pidin, they're following their rav, so that's what we have, a parach helim davar shel tzibur. Namely, that inachinami, that... In other words, the Klal Yisrael had to follow the Sanhedrin, but it was a mistake. They had to, you know, whoever made the mistake, who shouldn't have made it has to bring a kapara, and nothing that means. That could be, and that's a very, very frightening sort of a concept, that that only one is right, and either it's us or it's them, and we'll only know, l'asid lavo. In terms of Talmidim following a Rav, that's the Gemara in Mokom Shenohagu that we have. When we have Machlokes, we have halachic approaches. We have a din of La'olam al Yeshana Adam Mipnei HaMachlokes, that if you're in a place that has one psak halacha, so externally you're supposed to behave like that psak halacha. In terms of your private life, so then if you're planning on Dai to Lachzor to your other place, you can continue in your private life that opinion. Or if you are a Talmud Muvak of a Rav, who is of a minority opinion, you, as long as the Rav holds of his opinion, you have the right to follow his opinion. Let me give you an example. Let's say in terms of shaving during Sfira in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So in Eretz Yisrael, the Minhag HaOlam, and this is Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, Hasidim, Karbachites, I don't know, whoever, all the denominations, right? The Minhag HaOlam is that we don't shave during Sfira. Rav Lichtenstein has an opinion that he bases in a Chasam Sofer on Orach Chaim, that Kavod Shabbos, which is a din, drabanan, takes precedence over a minhag, and therefore every erev Shabbos during Sfira one can shave lechvod Shabbos, and he follows his opinion. In other words, no matter what, people who are talmidim mufakim of Rav Lichtenstein are allowed to follow his opinion. Right? That's however, if someone is not a talmid mufak and asks, what should I do? There are these two opinions. Either I should not shave on Erev Shabbos, or I should. So then, minhag ha'olam is not to shave, and then you have the issue of l'olam ha'yishana adam, hipnei ha'machlokes, that should, l'chora, be the opinion of everyone, except for the Talmud Mufak, except for the Talmidim Mufakim. Now, if you ask, well, what does it mean in terms of their children and their children's children, and, is this similar to the people who lived in Sor, that they had this tradition, v'chulei v'chulei, It's a good question, and I'm only aware of one individual who is not only a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, but whose children are Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, and so the Nachinami. So, that would go, and in terms of become a family minhag. Most students tend to take upon themselves the minhagim of their Rosh Yeshiva, or of the Rosh Yeshiva's Rosh Yeshiva, or the v'chulei v'chulei. But if one feels very strongly that in a minority opinion, that's your Rebbe, and then you have the right to follow it. That's a Gemara.
And, that's where there's an achievement. There's a Rav, he's an Alpi Halacha. Now, you're a constant, and the Rebbe says, you do this. He doesn't have to bring Halacha. He just, the Rebbe said, he's Kaddish with the Torah, the Rebbe said, so we have to do it that way. So they say that falls also into the same, why not?
In time of Chazal, they had a concept that in a particular locale, there would be one Beis Din. Chazal deal with an unusual situation where you have Shnei Batei Dinim, Bi'ir Achas, and then they say that when you have one Beis Din in a place, then that creates the Minhag HaMakom. When you have more than one Beis Din in a place, then there can be multiple Minhagei HaMakom. America, post the Holocaust, Vabarur is a place where there's Shnei batei dinim, elef batei dinim b'makom echad. And Rav Moshe deals with this in his tshuvas in terms of weddings during Sfiras HaOmer, in which he says that since there are different opinions as to what are the 33 days of Avelus, and since within America you have communities who follow this opinion and follow this opinion, so an individual has the right every year to choose an opinion, namely that there is no, that this is such, it's that as long as it fits into one opinion, as long as it fits into one of the three or four shitot as to when one can have weddings. So since it's shnei batedinim b'ir achas, there's no minag hamakom in America in terms of when one can or when one cannot have weddings. And the shnei batedinim b'ir achas means that you have a community that has a set pattern and a set leader. However, this community lives side by side with other communities, v'chulei v'chulei. It's also used, let's say, in shuls in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know how it goes in America, where if you'll ask, is this Nusach Sfarad or Nusach Ashkenaz, they'll say, it depends on the Shliach Tzibur. In other words, they'll have two Sidurim up front, and the Shliach Tzibur can choose one of two Sidurim. Some of you have shuls that have three Sidurim up front, right? Ashkenaz and Sfarad and Edot HaMizrach. And that's the minhag of the shul, that because of the kibbutz galios, the minhag is that we allow the shliach tzibur. That's been, in other words, that's been accepted. So if you have a community that follows a certain hitnahagut, then that's considered to be an opinion that someone who's part of that community should be following. So how large a community has to be, that we don't know. But l'chora, if you have a Rebbe that has many Hasidim, so he has the right to set the minhagim from the community. If someone asks on what basis does he do it, he shouldn't belong in that community. You can't ask such a question to be part of the community. To be part of the community, it means that you assume that individual has a unique connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's on that basis you're mevatel yourself to him. If you don't believe that, so then we have other communities.
Yeah.
Okay, Mesen, so welcome back, to the world. But it's a Nachanami. There are a lot of places you could live. Okay, yeah?
According to Rifa, is there a reason that he uses the number 49? And what would he do if there is a 50th opinion? Somebody would come up with way number 50th opinion.
And clearly there is a reason. I mean, in terms of Shaarei Bina, we deal with, in other words, that there were Nun Shaarei Bina, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu never revealed the Shaarei Bina Nun. In other words, a man can get up to Mem Tet Shaarei Bina, and one can view the Sefiras HaOmer as, in terms of going towards Matan Torah, reaching a point of Mem Tet, and not of, a Nun being the gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So clearly, Mem Tet is the maximum that Seichel HaEnoshi can comprehend. Nun can't be comprehended by Seichel HaEnoshi. It can be, it's there, but it's not comprehended. So when he deals with how we relate to the Torah, we can only deal with it within the numbers that we can relate to. Did I answer? Is there another question as well, or I answer? Okay, yeah. Sorry.
You mentioned that the garden specifically about consistency. A person might say, I've got two opinions, but a person says, wow, that makes so much sense. And he's convinced and persuaded, it's not just he's being imposed from the outside, but it's convinced him, it's entered, and that's his own opinion.
So again, in situations where there is no minhag ha'olam, then that's the shnei batedin. Then you could pick and choose according to convenience and according to what you think, etc. That's what I gave the example in America in terms of which days you keep for Sefiras HaOmer. There's no minhag there. In other words, or if you want to, there are multiple minhagim. There's no minhag olam, etc. But when you're dealing with a community where there is a minhag olam, and here that's why I said that it goes across the board, then you can't pick and choose. What you can do is you could say, I'm accepting him upon myself as being his Talmud, and he's my Rebbe Muvok, and then move into that mode. That you can do, but then, you have to be consistent in that mode. And if Rav Chaim Paskins in a different manner, in a different way, so then you have to follow him in that as well. In other words, you have the right to make yourself into a Talmud Muvok. You don't have the right to choose an opinion because it happens to appeal to, to your common sense, as opposed to minhag ha'olam.
Can you make yourself a Talmud Muvok, so to speak, or accept in a certain tune? You say, I accept Rav Chaim for a different Ravonis.
No. No. Talmud Mufak means a Talmud Mufak. That's not a Talmud Mufak. That's picking and choosing. No.
Why is consistency necessary?
Because the rule is Al Yeshana Adam et Meha Machlokes. The rule is that that there should be a when there is a mode of behavior that should be the mode of behavior of the individuals, that individuals should be mevata themselves to a mode of behavior that has been accepted by the Olam. If it's not accepted by the Olam, so no, but if it has been accepted by the Olam, then yes. And these things change. In other words, it could be. In other words, that, in other words, I don't know what was in Europe. I don't know, in other words, in there are other circumstances, etc. But currently, in other words, it's irrelevant if you go to a Hesder yeshiva, or you go to Mir, or you go to Rav Avadya's yeshiva, or you go to Boston, Boston Revi, or you would go to a Teimani yeshiva. Everyone is not shaving during Sfirat HaOmer, and all of, it's across the board. That's what I'm saying. So when you have something which is across the board, what was mentioned, let's say, on Friday night in terms of wearing a kerchief or wearing a shetel. So that's Shneid Batei Din and Bidir Achas. We have in Eretz Yisrael two opinions. Breslavers wear this way, and in Hungarians wear this way, and this one's wear, and Dati Lumi go this way. In other words, you have those who wear hats, you have those who wear shetels, you have those who wear kerchiefs. There's no opinion. So then, there you can pick and choose. There you have the right to pick and choose. This appears to be more tzanua. This appears to be, etc. As long as you're in the klal. If you decide to link yourself into a prat, I want to be a Breslaver, so then you want to be a Breslaver. Do as the Breslavers do. In other words, that's, there are different modes depending as to where one places oneself. Yes?
How does this relate to the realm of halacha?
The question of wearing a kerchief or wearing a shetel is an inyan of halacha. It's an inyan of what's considered to be a kisui rosh. Is a peyon nachris considered to be a proper kisui rosh? That's a machlokas aposkin. It's a question of halacha. And there are two opinions. And those two opinions are already from 300 years ago. We have two opinions. And so you find that the two opinions live side by side, relatively. Okay? The Seder. Okay. What I'd like to do is as follows. The next shiur, Yom Yisrael, will be a week from today. We're not having shiur on Sunday. A week from today will be shiur. I would like to certainly get up to the two dots on Zion Amadeis, up to Rabbi Yehuda Ben Mirekem LeMizrach. Those of you who want to go beyond can certainly, feel free to move beyond into the world of the technical detail of Ritzua Yotze, and then into the next sugya that we'll be dealing afterwards will be the sugya of Ofar Eretz Yisrael, a sugya dealing with basically Dine Zrayim, Mechubar, Talush, and Karka, Metaltalim, Bechulei. But in terms of where we'll be moving to next time, it's still an amud of basically Agarata with one halachic topic, and that is the topic of Zimra, of vocal and instrumental music. And so I gave you a daf of Mar Makomos, and Daniel, if I can ask you again to hand these out. And so that topic we will see because of the halacha lemaisa ramifications in terms of music bizman hazeh. And so what I would suggest, I mean, you have really two opinions. If what you'd like to do is when you get up to the three dots on Zion of the Days, those of you who would like to begin a chazara, I would certainly suggest it. Because I would like to have a bechina in about another month or so. About approximately when we get up to about Daf Yud. Mm-hmm. After 10 blad, I think we should have a bechina.
How long is it going to be
short? Two parts. One part, I guess what you call bekius. Simply, you learn 9 blad of Gemara, so hopefully you should know 9 blad of Gemara in terms of Shakla Vitaria. And one part in terms of things to think about that, could be more open book, perhaps, taking into account that which you learned, to just maybe a more enjoyable part of the Bechina. but to just see whether, you know, it's one on Chachma and one on Bina. Okay, why? You know, it's just to chazer the Gemara. If we don't chazer, we're never going to know it. But also to be able to be maven davar mitoch davar, maybe to put things together that as we were learning them, we didn't put them together. Maybe to raise other issues and to see how you can use that which you learned to explain those issues. Okay, but basically it's an excuse for a chazar. I mean, really, you know, it's just to feel that you know that Gittin at least is partially part of you, if not totally part of you. Okay.